All right, call the meeting order. It's 9 o'clock. Do we have?
Sorry.
We have a forum of both sides. We have a forum of both sides. That's just Kirchner's. Okay. So is Bobby not attending?
He's not here.
Okay. But we do have a forum. And welcome Historic Review Board. Glad you're here. I see David and Jessica and Emily and Sharon. And I don't think I know you, Sean. Okay, you're new.
Yes.
Right. Well, we haven't met officially. Thank you, staff, for being here. Thank you for preparing the documents that we need. Word of caution before we begin, and that is that we will have a general conversation in what's considered open session. When you want to discuss a specific property, a specific owner, that will need to be executed. So be sure you don't do that in our open regular session, if that's part of what you want to discuss or part of what you were trying to accomplish today. I would like to begin the meeting. David, would you mind giving us an overview of why we're here? What do you hope to accomplish? What is our task today?
Great. My name is David Bulling. I'm chair of the Historic Review Board. So the HRB requested a meeting with City Council to go over a few of the issues that have been percolating at the HRB for the last couple of years. I've been on the board for about 15 years, and the first 13 of those, whenever we would find a property that would need some repair work, which is what our ordinance says, that we have the obligation to identify properties to protect that asset, the historic property, specifically within a district. Typically, the HRB and city staff would work with that property owner. And 99% of the time, if we found an issue with the property, it was taken care of within several months. We had a really good relationship of working with property owners and with city staff and HRB to protect our historic assets. The last couple of years, it seems like that process is starting to fray, in that we'll identify a property, we have procedures to follow, and then when we get to about halfway through our procedures, things just kind of hit a wall. And we've had property owners that sometimes unknowingly and sometimes knowingly refuse to follow the ordinance. And so we're going to discuss our current procedures that we have, and if City Council would like to modify those, that's great. The purview of the Historic Review Board is just to follow the ordinance that City Council has adopted. So we don't set the ordinances, but we're supposed to follow them, and that's what we're trying to do. Unfortunately, we've got the list is getting longer for property owners that refuse to adhere to the ordinances. So hopefully we can make some progress on that today and understand some of the legal ramifications. We've got a list that I'm sure we can go through executive session. There's at least a dozen or more properties that just continue to stay on our identification list. So I'd like to just kind of keep that open and hear from City Council what you guys would like us to do moving
forward. You said in the past couple of years that things have changed, that you seem to have recalcitrant property owners who don't want to abide. Mm-hmm. What's happened? What's happened in the last couple of years that has made that the situation?
So we don't have the legal teeth to do anything?
Just a second. Let me get an answer to my question first. What's happened?
What happened is that we've identified properties. Code enforcement has gone out to give a citation. And then we just stop at that point. Nothing really happens past that.
Oh, and you didn't have to go past that before?
Most of the time. Like 99% of the time, the property owner would say, okay, I'm in violation. Let's fix this. Sometimes if they didn't have the money, we've got a reserve fund that we can help those in need to keep their properties in check. Sometimes it's just owners refuse to do anything about the issue.
Well, have you noticed that these are people who are not rooted in Fredericksburg culture and just kind of rejecting authority?
That's a great question. What I've seen, and others please chime in, It really doesn't matter.
Okay.
And so some of them are new entrants to the community. Some of them have resources. Some of them don't. So it's kind of a hodgepodge. There's a handful that obviously have the resources but choose not to. Some that lacking in resources also refuse. So it's not a, it's hard to stereotype.
Okay, Tony?
Well, apparently you don't have the legal backing or law enforcement backing this thing, code enforcement. Apparently there's no enforcement. Do we have to pass another ordinance or what?
I don't believe we need to pass any additional ordinances. I think we probably just need to follow what we have on the books. That's the issue.
Oh, it's got to be stopped in some place.
That's what we're here to find out.
But our ordinance works fine. We're just not following through on it. We've got, there's steps that identifying demolition, to find neglect, and then the things that need to be done. And one of those ends up with the city actually making the repairs. I mean, that's how the ordinance is written now. And we're just, like David said, just stopping and not moving forward on it.
Talk about construction.
No.
Right. Well
repair. We have a 6-step demolition by neglect procedure. And it's brought a copy. I keep it with me all the time, right?
It's fine.
And it usually at step 4, which is code enforcement citation, we do that and then we never follow steps 5 and 6, and the properties just continue to kind of stay in limbo.
Where's the ball dropped on step 5 and 6?
Well, I can read you what what the procedure is, and then maybe we can discuss that, because I'm not sure where the problem is.
That's what we're interested in.
Step 4 is code enforcement. But actually, let me just back up a bit. So let me just go through the whole thing. I'll read it verbatim just so everyone's on the same page. So step 1 is determination of neglect. The board identifies a property that has fallen into disrepair and directs the city staff, historic preservation officer, to issue a preliminary determination letter to the property owner. This provides the property owner 30 days from the date of the notice to correct the defects or present the board with a plan. Great. Step 2, code enforcement. The city is to notify code enforcement of the determination of neglect on day 1 so that they may issue a notice of violation. Sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't, from my perspective. Step 3, subsequent determination. If within 30 days following step 1, the owner does not respond, the city shall send a subsequent determination letter to the owner of the property, which provides the property owner an additional 90 days from the date of the notice to correct the defects or present the board with the plan. So up to this point, there's 120 days of time that the owner can respond. Step 4 is code enforcement citation. If after 90 days, the owner of the property fails to respond to the 2 letters provided by the city, code enforcement may take action, which could result in a case being filed in municipal court. Sometimes that's happening, and here more recently, that has been the case. Step 5, city stabilization. The Historic Review Board may direct the city to accomplish the work necessary to repair this and stabilize the property to prevent further deterioration. The city shall pay for these repairs and the expenses will be assessed as a lien on the real estate. Step 6, lien establishment. The city of Fredericksburg will establish a lien for the work performed to stabilize the historic property. So we have, in my tenure on the board, we've never gotten to stage 5 and 6. We've been very cautious to do that. Obviously, I'm a big proponent of property rights. And so having the city perform any work on a property, that's very continuous at best, I think. So that's our procedures. We're, and when we talk about stabilization, I can give you a general example. There's an individual hypothetical property in town that has a hole in a patch in the roof that needs to be repaired. So when we say the property needs to be protected from further demolition, we're not talking about a complete new roof. We're talking about maybe a couple $100 worth of roof repair to save the property from further deterioration. And so things like that are not getting done. So our board feels that it's not overly overstress a breach to ask a property owner to repair a hole in a roof to you know, keep properties from further decay. So
overall, would you say the problem is that we are not enforcing what we already have, or that we need to expand what we have?
I don't think there's a need for an expansion. We just need to enforce what we have. So at least for the first step.
Are you aware of where we're missing enforcement?
I'm not aware specifically, but I might ask Chief Warhour and Lieutenant Framer to weigh in on the code enforcement side in terms of the process when it comes to these types of properties.
I'm pull a chair up if you like, or you can stand, whatever, sit there.
Thank you.
Make sure we hear.
I mean, the properties, the major properties that we're talking about are have been an issue and an issue for a long time. Each property has its uniqueness. I won't try to keep it general. But like Braxton just mentioned, you know, code enforcement, they make notifications, they may issue a citation, but a $100, $200 citation on a $100,000, $300,000 project is not going to sway an individual one way or the other. That's if it even makes it into court, or if it's even, you know, paid or dismissed. There's a lot of other actions that can take, that can happen, you know, just by filing a citation and not necessarily gets paid, or and the property doesn't necessarily get fixed. A citation is just a tool. It's not going to make action happen. So, but we can talk more specific, I guess, you know, an executive if we need to, but go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of conversation with this, and it's something that's important to code, and we have conversations about it. I think there's, when we look at the process, we have the steps in place to try to remedy these properties, but the little nuances in the middle, the communication, the information, timelines are all things that kind of slows it down. And I don't think that when we have HRB development and code, everybody's exactly on the same page as far as where we're at, what we need to file this charge, what time limit that they have to get to that. Are we past that? And I think it's the communication that kind of slows this down. Code has been issuing citations when they feel that they have something that meets it to where they could do it. Then there's other properties that maybe that's not the best course of action. And some way of kind of getting our three groups together to communicate on these properties so that we're all on the same page on what we need to do to get it corrected, I think would help this process a lot. As far as once we issue that citation and they choose not to move forward because they either don't have funding or don't want to spend the funding on it, I think it kind of ties code's hands because they don't have, I guess, the ability to force them to fix it from that point forward. And I think that's where the city comes in through the legal process.
Yeah, just if I can add on to that, we have had very few cases, but we have had cases within the last year where code enforcement has issued the citation, the property owner has paid or not paid, and maybe multiple times for citations, and then it's gone to municipal court. The municipal court judge makes a ruling and the property is not fixed.
Well, and there's, so, and not to talk about in case by case instances, there's been issues. Sometimes it's, you know, there's deals that get made or things that keep continue to drag it out. And it gets slowed down in the judicial process because we're waiting on resolution from the court before we can move on to the next step. And who is responsible for steps five and step six? And I think those are all issues that we need to resolve. I don't think it's a lack of willingness on anybody's part to want to resolve these matters. I think it's a how we go about it that we're trying to figure out.
So are we just have, we've run into a spate of defiant historic property owners.
Yes, sure. Yes.
Yeah. And that's increased.
It feels that way.
That would be the change over the couple of years.
May I?
Sure.
Okay. So I would agree that there's a communication issue just from what I've everybody I've spoken with. And so I think there's a couple of things that are kind of missing. One of the things is code. They don't necessarily know the HRB guidelines. So, and that's not any fault of theirs, but they used to have somebody at City Hall that would alert them of these things. So there's not really that person anymore. So, you know, we might see things that are not right. And so we report it. But
let me stop you there, Jessica. You're talking about that would alert code. The people who are enforcing of yes. the violations?
Yes.
In other words, this person, and this is an HPO, historic preservation officer.
Right.
This is what this person did 24/7 or whatever.
So they would alert code, or they would alert development services, whether it was a stop work order or okay. code enforcement issue. And that person was kind of had eyes on the district, basically.
Okay. And we're missing that now.
We're missing okay. that, I think.
Go ahead.
And then also, so the citations, it's always kind of confusing from what I understand. Code will go and cite these properties, but then after that, they don't know where it ends up in the system. And so it could go to court, it could be stuck in the middle of nowhere, but they don't know, nothing is communicated to them, and they're asked not to double cite somebody. Basically, like stack tickets, is that what it's called? And then I think the timeline thing is also an issue. It's like, so there are certain things that are made where the deals that are made are not deals, basically, but they're given a certain timeline. So timeline is definitely an issue. You know, code isn't necessarily aware of these timelines. And then also, as far as when it does go to court, there's a specific case right now where it went to court and they had to pay their fine, which I think might have been like $500. And now it's just there.
They paid the money, and that's it.
It was like it was made. It was made okay.
Yeah.
So do we go back and do we cite them again?
Yeah. I'd like Sharon, some clarification on what you said about sometimes. So they're identified for citation, and some are appropriate for citation, and some are not. Why would they not be if they were identified as demolition by neglect?
I think it goes back to communication, because you identified some timelines that are to be followed, but and it's just outside looking in, sometimes those timelines are amended or adjusted. And
by whom?
Our information comes from a spreadsheet that tells us kind of what's happened, what HRB has decided. And, you know, not to get into property names, there was one specific one where they were supposed to submit plans. We don't know if those plans were submitted, or what do they do after the plans are submitted? What's the timeline to start the correction? So when we don't know any of that, we don't know if they're in violation or not, other than just somebody says they're in violation. So if we're going to file charges, we got to have more specific information of what they're actually doing wrong at this point. So if we don't know, it's hard to, in good conscience, issue a citation to somebody if you don't know why you're issuing it.
Is the fact that you don't know a new thing? You used to know?
I don't know if I did or not. I've had code for a couple of years.
You've only had code for a couple.
So I don't know. I just know this is the way it is.
That's because of a change that was made when Anna was the...
2 years ago.
Yeah. When it moved from code enforcement to the police department. So when you ask history, they don't have that much history yet.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't think that every one of them is like a cookie cutter. They all have their own little
features.
Yeah, everyone's different.
And everything's a little bit different. And having to trying to navigate the process with those little nuances, sometimes there's challenges. When they're pretty clear cut, code has been quick to issue citations. When they're not, they kind of stall a bit.
Well, actually, on the timing, Sharon brings up a good point. Whenever the code enforcement went to law enforcement, that's when our list started getting longer. I mean, how many are on the list now?
Sharon, a lot. I haven't out of them.
That's like the one was it's like the what's well, I'm just saying it's the empirical data from what we're seeing is that our list is
the list
longer
of our list of
well no our, you know, list of non-compliance instead of used to we would identify and within 3 or 4 or 5 months we would tick it off, we would take care of it.
Okay.
And that list over the last couple of years has just been getting longer and longer. It's not that we're identifying more properties, it's just we're not being able to execute and remedy.
They're not moving off the list having been
correct
disposed. Okay.
I mean, that's my opinion, Sharon, please.
Okay.
Yeah. My notes go back all the way to March of 2025, where we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And, you know, and then it just drops, nothing happens.
Okay. Yeah. Listen.
So let me ask Cliff. I know before you, and I don't know, are you still in charge of historical?
Well, my department, development department. Services.
So
yeah, we
you
serve
have
that
a person that's assigned to the historical.
Well, we have an HPO. Susanna is our HPO, our historic preservation officer. And while I have the opportunity here, I promised I wasn't going to try to jump in too much. I was going to listen a little bit, but I think what I really want to add is from a property maintenance standpoint, and I look at this as a property maintenance issue as well, just not a historic preservation issue, because when these properties are deteriorating, they become a property maintenance issue, and that's where code enforcement comes in a lot. This is what I'm seeing initially from the process. So we have the process, and Mick provided a memo, which I appreciate y'all have. You have the opportunity to go after these properties with a standard citation of a ticket, basically. You go out, you give them the ticket, they go to the municipal court, they pay the fine, they think they're done at that point. But that does not allow for us to take action to get on that property and resolve or mitigate the issue. That takes a court order or an injunction at that point. And I think what you're seeing is, yes, you have a growing list, and maybe we can be better in addressing these and coordinating with code enforcement on the easy ones. But I would suspect your higher priority ones, the citations are not going to resolve that problem. That's why they stick. They stay there. So that means we're going to have to be more aggressive and go for some sort of injunctive relief. And what does that mean? More money. It means more money to file it through the municipal court. It means more money to commit to the mitigation of the property. It means more money to go out to get it and lien it and follow through on that court-ordered lien. So I really think for those major issues, your top three or four, if they don't resolve the problem, if we don't have those resolved, we're going to have to maybe look at the court order option at that point. Mick can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's really those chronic nuisance properties that really do not want to comply or become an issue. You have to go through that process. That's just my opinion.
Us that once the court gets done, they don't know what happened after that.
The municipal court. There's separate courts.
I know. Municipal court.
Yeah.
And nobody's communicating.
Well, I don't know if it's communicating. I think maybe we need to find a better way to identify those top two or three properties. And then you as an HRB work with us to prioritize them. And we may not get all four of them taken care of in year one because we just don't have the funding for it. But let's go after the first one. Let's get a plan to address it. Let's come after it the next year. In other words, when we build our budget, we need you to start identifying what your highest priority is so we can look at those properties to mitigate them first and then continue on down the line. Because it can get very expensive very fast.
What I'm hearing, I think, is that there was at one time someone in City Hall who was able to keep up and inform everybody about the process, even having the municipal court process. In other words, they paid a fine, then whether they acted or not was watched. Yeah. Is that correct? That we had somebody as an HBO that was watching this process and we no longer do it?
And I don't know what their...
I think it's more of an accountability for the process. Right now, we don't have one group accountable for it. So it's shared between maybe two or three different groups. And so we're losing that accountability.
And as an internal staff, we're willing to make that happen and keep the board up to date and the council up to date. I mean, there's ways to make sure we keep the process moving forward, and we're working on that. And we're happy to work with the code enforcement folks. I think the other thing is, I'm very honest here, they're not historic preservation officers out there as well. And we, you know, we need to make sure, and we'll work with them to make sure we keep them up to date. And the court needs to understand the prosecutor.
There's also, sorry, Cliff.
Oh, no, you're good.
There's also three or four different timelines. HRB has a timeline. Code has a timeline. Municipal court has a timeline. And so there, all these timelines don't line up. They won't, you know, because we get to the point filing a citation, it goes to court, it will get scheduled a court date, and it may be 30 days and it may be 90 days from now before it goes to court. Then it goes to court. The court may issue, you have 30, 60 or 90 days to do something. And if you don't after that time, then you have to pay the citation. So there's a lot of different timelines that are going on that are not dependent on each other. And so when we say, well, you know, we filed a citation and it's in municipal court, it could be set 3 months from now. And then the court could say, hey, you need to do this, and we're going to give you this much time to rectify the situation. So that's where all the timelines are going to be different, and they're not going to line up.
From an HRB perspective, it would be nice to know what the status is for each of these things, as opposed to our list just getting longer. I mean, sure. We even have it color coded.
Sure.
Tested this list, and so got lots of notes over the. This is more than a year old of what's going to happen, and then it doesn't happen, and we've got nowhere to turn. So we're happy to keep track of all of them. If somebody will just report they were cited and they went to municipal court, where we are in the process, you know,
Who should be doing that?
According to the ordinance, it should be the officer, HPO. Historic Preservation Officer.
But there's two things. Excuse me. So there's one thing about getting a report on the status of it, and the other is taking action. Because there's a lot of those that, for a year or more, it's the same rationale. We're going to get with the property owner, and we're just not making any progress.
Who? The police?
Well, just two questions right now. So I see you've got the color coded spreadsheet, Braxton. You mentioned the spreadsheet. And then
we get that spreadsheet.
The same one. Okay. That's helpful to know. We need to have a document that is current for everyone to be looking at. So everyone's getting the same information, not, you know, her version that's a year old.
Let me ask you, Clint. You made a comment that you don't have a specialist. Well, these guys aren't specialists either, but they are on the committee, on the commission. And my whole deal is all you got to do is read. The ordinance. You don't have to be an expert in historical preservation. So that's what I don't understand. We need to have somebody that writes on this thing that keeps going. I think it's great to share it. You might want to share it with the city council.
Some of these have very little to do with historic preservation. They have a lot more to do with just demolition by neglect. They're not necessarily, I mean, they're in the historic district, but they're standing there rotting in the historic district. I see this as our broken window theory. I know y'all are all familiar with that and how that's attached to code enforcement, and how if you don't take care of the properties, it brings the whole neighborhood down. There's some of these properties you wouldn't want to live across the street from or next door to. There's one over on Akron that's, there's one
that Lake Street
has a rat infestation, and the people living next door have a problem with that. I mean, this is not just historic preservation. This is our broken window that we need to address as a city. It's not just us, it's all of us.
Well, we want to.
So I really appreciate y'all meeting with us, because
Fredericksburg has a long history of considering this an important asset that is key to the success of the community. What we need to do is make sure we have the enforcement tools and that everybody's on the same page. Sounds like we have a communication issue. Do we have a gap in ability to enforce? that's to Mick. In our document, our ordinances, is there something we're leaving on the table to be better about this?
Well, let me first start by saying that you do have one of the strictest historic preservation ordinances that I'm aware of, and we have defended it in court. I think Sharon remembers a couple of those cases. And you've been very strong in court and have successfully defended your ordinance against attacks so far. I think the ordinance as written is defensible. There's a couple of improvements we could make, but they're not. Improvements, they're not problems with the ordinance that keep it from being, what I put in the memo was the three basic tracks you follow. It's just a very general memo, but I think basically that's what you've been talking about today. We did in the last 5 or 6 years have two cases. One was an enforcement case and one was a defense of our regulations case that we prevailed in. One of them was a design case. So you've had some enforcement activity outside of the municipal court realm. But I think what we're talking about today, we probably need to go further than the municipal court on many of the properties, especially if you have a list up.
Does that require a new city council action?
It requires budget money. I mean, that's what it boils down
to. But the steps to exert the authority, we already have.
Like I said, I have a couple notes here. Okay. If I happen to get on and I put a couple before Daniel was here. On a couple little things we can do to improve the ordinance to keep it from being attacked or prolonged in a fight if we get in over it, but we can do it.
Okay. So from what you've heard from the HRB and the police, we have the track already to do. We don't need any new action on the council to be better about this, to follow this.
You need money.
Okay.
And it can be significant. I hate to keep saying that, but you know.
Well, that was my question.
To your point, though, I mean, if it's fixing a roof or fixing a rat issue, like who needs to have the budget for that? Is it for the code enforcement and they have to have supplies for that kind of stuff? Or how does that work?
We would normally do that kind of thing with a contractor.
Okay, but here's my legal question for you, Nick. So in order for the city to actually fix a hole in a roof for a couple $100, does the city have to sue the owner to get the right to do that?
The way the statute's written, it was originally written, it references back to Chapter 214 of the Local Government Code, which gives you authority if you go through all the hearing process like we have in the ordinance, and you give authority to the city to repair or demolition. You do have the right to go on the property to do that. Now, that doesn't mean they're not going to sue you to try to stop you from doing it. But that alone, tying it back to the local government code, is sufficient, I think, legally to go on the property and effect the repair.
So why do we need more money then?
The lawsuit.
That will follow that?
Yeah. And
you need the money in the law and legal.
Well, yeah. And putting the case together, like Lieutenant Romer was saying, we got to have all the documentation, the photographs and everything else.
More than 20 years ago, when I was on the historic review board had been there for a while already, we went through the whole procedure. We had a property that we followed the whole track, and we got to the end and I'm like, okay, so city, go fix it. And they looked at me like, we don't have any money to fix it. So I went to council during the budget process and begged for there to be some money assigned in the budget for historic preservation. So that was used once, but now it's become in the budget. It's now historic preservation grants, and we have a process and we give this money away. And so there's not that piece of money that I ask for if we get redo repairs and assign a lien is gone because it's assigned to give away, which is a good thing. But now there's not one where if we get to the end of the legal process, there's not a pot of money to draw from. So It's right. We've got to have that. The question is, how much do we have to have? My experience has been is if we push on these people with citations and municipal court and threaten to sue, they're not all going to get an attorney and go to court. Some of them are just going to fix it or sell it. You know, it's not like we have to take this whole list and have hundreds of thousands of dollars for each person that's on here. People will comply if they just get a little bit. Some people will comply if they get a push. But we quit pushing. We've stopped it before we pushed more, I believe.
You get 95% compliance, yeah. If you're going through the process for most responsible owners, but there is a percentage of our community that doesn't want you messing with their property and they can do whatever they want. And that includes historic property.
It sounds like a higher percentage than ever.
I don't know, but there'll always be some.
Yeah.
What happens to the unused grant money? Like, so we have the grant and I think it's like $30,000 and then they have a year to use it. And then a lot of people don't get the work done in a year and they don't collect it.
Carried over into the next year's budget. Now I want to clarify that. And yeah, we've talked about this because one of the first things as a new staff we had to address is when that funding was awarded to the individual property owners, you're absolutely correct. They had 1 year to utilize it, but it wasn't specified to them. And I think everybody got the impression that that money was held for more than a year. And we've cleaned that up. But to answer your question, it simply goes back into the next year's budget. It doesn't add to another $30,000. It just goes back in and is unused at that point. So every year the money is $30,000 that is used there. It doesn't grow, I guess, is what I'm saying.
And can it go into an account where it does grow for HRB?
Well, that's a call of the mayor and council and how you budget that. And to Sharon's point, I mean, we did talk about that and using that money for that. But that goes back to my earlier comment about we need to prioritize, because it only goes so far to mitigate those issues. I mean, like, for example, we have one of these properties that needs a complete rehab. It's going to be more than $30,000, I guarantee you. And then all that money's gone. And what do you get out of it? Do you stabilize it? Have you completely mitigated it? Then how do you address it with the owner? Because ultimately, if you front the money and you pay for it, you have to file a lien on it. And then you have to foreclose on the lien, which is another.
You can't foreclose on the lien.
Can't do that. See,
it's a non-possessory
that's different than where I come from.
So cover it until, under Texas state law, you can't recover it until the property sells or rebuilt.
I think that's the ironic thing.
So that's another obstacle that you see in the state of Texas. You do not see in a lot of us.
As far as cost, the legal cost is probably 5 to 10 times more than the actual work.
Oh, for sure.
And that's it. Because most of the time, from demolition by name, like our purview is just to stabilize the property, not completely rehab it so you can turn it into short-term rental. It's just to stabilize the property. So most of the time, it's not that expensive.
Well, for instance, on that design case I mentioned, it had to do with the door design.
Mm-hmm. I would say all the way through
$450,000 on the other side on attorney's fees.
A stinking door.
Mm-hmm. And we spent money, of course.
Two doors.
It's so, two doors, sorry.
This grant money, forgive me for not knowing.
About 2 years.
Is that for people who qualify because of economic?
No, there's no economic requirements.
Oh. There's an application process.
So it can be the richest guy in town who has lots of property and he's not taking care of it.
Yeah, we actually had two of those the last time a rental came.
Because nobody knows about it. Like it was originally set up, I feel like, for the sweet, you know, grandma that couldn't afford it. Yeah. Or taxes are rising.
We've had a case like that as well, where the person appears to not have the resources. The city staff has gone to them. Here's the application. If you to get the money to make the repair. No, thank you.
I refused to complete the application at all. It's one of ones that's been on there the longest.
Yeah. And so that just gets stopped right now. We're just going, okay, well, we'll try to figure out some way to make you do this.
Right.
Okay.
So I'm getting the feeling that y'all maybe are leaning towards not doing the grant process anymore and giving that to the city for this enforcement?
Not necessarily. I think you could just maybe expand the use of that money and have the ability to go one way or the other depending on the needs.
Well, the other problem I've heard about the grant process and the timeline is they get the award.
You got 1 year to use it.
They still have to come back before you with a plan to get approved, right? And then they have to line up a contract or something, and right. they're not getting it done within a year.
But well, some have.
Actually, most of them were fairly small repairs, but necessary. And the grants were fairly small, and most of them finished. There are just a few I think we had five, and probably three of them did what they were supposed to do and got the money. Am I correct me
yeah,
if I'm wrong?
Yeah. And there's an easy fix to that. I mean, if we have a series of applications that come in and the committee, the selection committee, we sit down and identify three and four projects that take that $30,000 before the official award, we just take it to the HRB at the next meeting with the design, and you just basically ratify the grant with the improvements. Then they don't have to come back before you. That's an easy fix.
And that's we'll do a conditional what approval you want to and do. Let city staff sign off on the plans at a later date.
I mean, that in a sense becomes a C of A approval that allows the HPO to just sign off on each individual permit.
So in answer to your question, it'd be great if we still had those grants, because I think they get ahead of demolition by neglect. If somebody applies, they've mm-hmm. got something wrong with their roof and they fix that little spot on their roof, then now you've staved off demolition by neglect. So if we had those grants, and we had a pile of money to go after the big ones.
And most of the options for grant award winners, it can be approved administratively because it's like paint or it's mm-hmm. like light kind materials. It's like repair of it. It's not like a grant. It's not normally a remodel, although this time we did get a remodel.
But most of them were like leaking around a door. So they had someone come in and repair the door frame. So that's.
And I think that the issue is with our original thought, you know, of having the sweet grandma that needed repair. The issue is that we can't give them the money until after they made the repair. And so some people don't have the $10,000 to do it ahead of time and then get reimbursed.
It's worked out well as that having that money more of a carrot mm-hmm. as opposed to having a stick. And I think we've been able to resolve most of the issues, 90%+ of them, by having that carrot to provide to the property owner. Worked out really well.
I think it's a great program. I'm not advocating to remove that at all. I think it's a great thing to do. I'm wondering, could y'all add some columns to that spreadsheet to talk about what the cost is? And then we can also be tracking legal fees, because that would be very helpful during the budget cycle to be able to know what sort of pot of money we're going to need for basic repairs. And then also we need to have it be known what we're having to spend on legal, because that's tax money too. So I think there's a kind of people think that it's just, well, I'll just sue, you know, as if there's no repercussions or anything to that. And so we need to have that be a big discussion as we're looking at having an in-house attorney as well.
I think the HRB would be qualified to make an estimate for what the actual work would cost. That's the easy part. Mm-hmm. But we're not qualified to estimate what the legal
as it goes on, yeah. Like as Property ABC has been in the process for a year, we've spent X dollars on legal. So if staff could maybe track that, it would be helpful.
You're not asking us to estimate what the project
just the cost,
but what the city has spent on the project, but
I'm
not
sorry. For sorry. Legal to be able to provide what the cost is for legal. But then if y'all could give a ballpark, it doesn't have to be exact, but just if it's under 2,000 or 2 to 10 or whatever,
yeah,
it would be nice to know that.
Because we've got one on here that's so simple that it shouldn't cost anything, but if they won't do it and we have to go to court, then it could end up costing a lot. I mean,
it's like a signed hypothetical sign that is out of compliance. It's a sign or mural. It's, you know, $10 worth of paint. But how much it's going to cost on the legal side.
Or someone who hypothetically used this kind of fencing that you use around mark plots when you're getting ready for a festival. and they fence their backyard with it. Now, how much does that cost to remediate? They can just take it down. And they've been promising, they've been on there more than a year.
Hypothetically,
they've been on there a long time.
Yeah, but then that way we can show the difference.
So it's like, not an expensive, my point is it's not an expensive fix. It's an inexpensive fix.
But to have that conversation during budgeting of, you know, these, say, 10 projects could cost $10,000, but instead we're having to spend $75,000 with legal fees. So just two separate things.
Yeah, I think Nick would be the one to make that estimate for us.
Oh, it can be more expensive than you think, of course. What we have always tried to do since I've been involved with Fredericksburg is use the code enforcement staff and the municipal court and prosecutor's salary. So it's, you know, that's obviously hopefully not more legal fees in that part of the process. And then the city attorney does as much as possible in dealing with the property owner and the property owner's attorney to avoid litigation and even come back to the board. Maybe that's happened a few times to try to get some accommodation to avoid having to go to court. But if there's a property that's recalcitrant and it's got law, and maybe some of those people are going to have financial resources to fight and to fight over the ordinance, that's where I've been brought in all these years.
Right.
And unfortunately, I don't work for free anymore.
So making your
they can be expensive.
In your experience in all these years, as you're saying.
Yeah.
Like a property that's in the middle of a neighborhood and the historic district, let's say, or the, obviously. Mm-hmm. And the neighbors on both sides keep their property up pretty well. But somebody in the middle is just not, and it's maybe they're absent or they're waiting to do something or they don't care or they inherited it, whatever.
And they want to tear it down.
And it's sorry.
There's some properties that example, they're hoping for it to just rot and fall in on itself so they can build something new there. They've told us that.
And we've had several of those, where they wanted to, demolition by neglect is their strategy.
Okay. We'll just tear it down and anyway, wait 5 years and then build on it.
Okay.
We'll pay the fees.
That really was.
We'll pay the fines, $350.
Yeah, that really wasn't where I was going.
I'm sorry.
But let's say that it's a public menace because of vermin, et cetera.
Yeah.
So could the city just declare it something and go in and tear it down?
Under our substandard structures.
This long hearing process that we have to go through in the municipal?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah, there is a hearing process, and it's a different set of laws.
Okay.
I mean, obviously overlap. But there's a different set of laws. We tried to build that ordinance in constitutional format as well. So if it's a true public hazard or a nuisance, and it goes through that process, that's a separate process.
So in your experience, are there property owners of that ilk who just won't do it because they won't?
Yes.
And we have one
we're working on at the moment. And there are more that we can work on.
And I'm saying, I'm talking about somebody who doesn't live there, that's just their property. Because there's an added advantage. If I live here, leave me alone. But if I live somewhere else and I have this property and it's vermin infested or a public hazard to the neighbor,
I know of one.
That I can just say, I'm not doing it.
Two,
three. Because they know you have to follow a process to make them.
That's right. Okay. And they do.
I mean, it's blatant not following the ordinance.
And so would you say that there's several of us?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. And that's true in every community.
What in the world's going on here?
And you're right to know, Mr. Mayor, that homesteads have a little additional protection and also political protection. You know, the city picking on their guy's home, especially in a community that's built on property rights. Like
I'm not one to violate homesteads.
Point to notice, because the board and the council have to have the willingness to go forward on homestead
property. But our biggest problem are not homestead properties. They're investor properties that they're just letting rot.
Or commercial.
Yeah. Or commercial. So I would say if we get into a legal fight, no matter the size of it,
it does matter somewhat how big the issue is on site, but you're talking at least $10,000 in legal fees for everything, and it can go way up.
Counsel, I feel that we definitely need to be in executive session because I have some questions that I need answered that would be executive session. Would it be all right if we do that now?
Sure.
Because there's some answers to questions that I need that obviously need some specificity. Yeah, Tim, before you leave.
Before you guys go into executive session, I'd like to make a statement.
Sure.
We're all lawmakers in this room. We are all in the weeds and this stuff up over our head. The people that we're dealing with don't care. And from a public perception standpoint, we are responsible to make sure that the rules that we have and the ordinances that we have on the books, whether it's HRB or planning or zoning, it doesn't make any difference. If we don't stand firm on those rules, then don't have them. And using money as an excuse, while it's nice to talk about it in this room and it's politically a bad deal, if we don't do this, then we don't have to do any of it because we're neglecting our responsibility to hold people responsible for what we say they must do on their property. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else want to make a comment before we go into executive? Declare us an executive. Thank you. We're back into regular sessions. Having no further business, I will adjourn.
It's just.